are speaking with Noviolet Bulawayo, the author of We Need New Names, a book the New York Times called, quote, a deeply felt and fiercely written debut novel. Noviolet was born and raised in Zimbabwe. Her stories have won the 2011 Kane Prize for African Writing and shortlisted for other prestigious awards, including the 2013 Man Booker Prize. Noviolet earned her MFA at Cornell University, where she was a recipient of the Truman Capote Fellowship and most recently was a lecturer of English. She is now a Wallace Stegner Fellow at Stanford University. Welcome, Noviolet. It's a pleasure to have you with us on the Book Report.
Thank you for having me, Elaine.
We Need New Names. Does the title reference back to the children who you meet on page one, whose names are Bastard, Cheapo, God Knows, and others?
It does reference to the children and the many interesting names that I have in the book. But it also speaks to the need for new identities as a country, new ways of seeing ourselves, new ways of imagining our destinies.
Introduce us to Darling.
Darling is a 10-year-old girl who is growing up in a shanty town after her family loses their home due to a government operation. And she is mostly found playing with her friends, Bastard, Chipo, God Knows, Tina and Spo, and trying to survive because they are growing up at a time when the country is falling apart due to failure of leadership. In the midst of all this, Darling is able to escape to the United States to live with an aunt in Kalamazoo, Michigan. But she gets there to realize that the American dream is not what it's cut out to be. And by the end of the novel, she's sort of struggling and failing to call this place home.
I've been very fortunate to have visited Zimbabwe two times, but I believe most Americans have not ever visited Zimbabwe or know a lot about your country's history. How have American audiences reacted to the book?
I've had a lot of good feedback from American readers and beyond American readers, from readers in general. And I think part of it is that literature or art allows people to cross borders and visit countries and places that they are not familiar with. And what ends up mattering is not the space itself, but the character and their story and their dream. So I think most people who have reached out to me at least seem to be connecting with Darling on that level. And I think that's all that matters.
This is a quote from the book. I don't go to school anymore because all the teachers left to teach over in South Africa, Botswana, and Namibia, and where there's better money. Is this true? Is this still going on?
At the time I was writing, there was a mass movement of people from Zimbabwe to other countries in search of better pastures, and professionals and teachers included were among those. So what happened is that teachers left, and the education system that had been one of the best education systems in Africa sort of went downhill. It's not to say that kids were without teachers, but they were without the kind of qualified teachers that I grew up with, for instance. But that, of course, being a fiction book, it sort of puts it in your face. Now Zimbabwe is experiencing some stability. It's certainly a different country from the country that inspired the story. But still, it doesn't mean that things are perfect. I think we have a long way to go.
One of the narrator's friends, Chipo, is 11 and she's pregnant. We find that here very shocking. Was that a common occurrence?
That Chipo is 11 years old and pregnant is not a common occurrence at all. But that it's not common does not mean that it doesn't happen altogether. I am interested in things and issues that go on unaddressed or untold. And child abuse is one of them, you know, and I think it's something that goes beyond Zimbabwe's borders. I think even here in the U.S., you have cases of kids being abused in different ways. So that's just my way of drawing attention to a subject that I really, really care about. And of course, one would want that in a perfect world, we don't have 11-year-olds being victims, but I believe they're there. Mm-hmm.
One scene that really struck me was when the NGO or the philanthropic organization came to the town. There's certainly a lot of debate, plus and minus, about the effects of the NGO in Africa. What's your opinion?
Where the NGOs are concerned, it's a mixed bag, of course. When I'm thinking of Zimbabwe, especially during the lost decade, the time that we now know as the lost decade, when systems started unraveling, the NGOs kind of played an important role in bringing some stability in terms of providing goods that were not accessible. And you cannot dismiss that kind of aid. That said, I'm also interested on the other side of the coin, where the receiver is sort of reduced by their circumstance, reduced from a person to a nameless being, sort of. And when you look at the interactions in the novel, the children observe that even though the NGO are donating goods, they are also not interested in making contact with them as humans. And I feel like this is the time when we should reimagine the ways that the NGO and people on the ground, not just in Zimbabwe, sort of interact. And I'm all for the preservation of people's humanity and dignity, and the kind of aid that moves people forward, not the kind of aid that sort of solves issues on a temporary matter and creates a cycle of dependency, just as we see in the shanty town where adults don't do anything and just wait for NGOs.
You referred to the lost decade. For our listeners who aren't familiar with your country's history, when is that? When was that?
It was roughly around the early 2000s to 2009, 2010. So that whole decade when, failure of leadership led to a crisis that was unlike anything independent Zimbabwe had ever seen before.
In one scene in the book, an angry crowd of black Zimbabweans confronts a white man and woman at their home, and the man shouts, "I am an African. My father was born here. I was born here, just like you." How should he have been answered by the crowd?
That's a difficult question, and the question itself came from my interest and concern, because sometime during the Zimbabwean crisis, white farmers lost their land because it was believed that they didn't own the land. And, of course, that's traceable to the fact that their ancestors came from outside. But I feel like an African is it's not a neat identity. It should not be grounded on race. I feel like as long as somebody is born in Africa, they are an African.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Towards the end of the book, there was a phone conversation with Darling and her friend back in Zimbabwe. And her friend says, "Why did you just leave? It is your country. You have to love it, to live in it, and not leave it. You have to fight for it, no matter what, to make it right." Is this your struggle?
Absolutely. That's my struggle. And that's the kind of conversations. I was lucky to be writing We Need New Names at a time when social media was a big thing. And we took to Facebooks where we had conversations and debates. And there was an issue of who owned the Zimbabwean story, who had the right to question and point fingers. And of course, some of us who were outside felt like people on the ground should be doing something. And of course, there was the Arab Spring somewhere in the background. And we're like, look what's happening in other countries. And people on the ground were like, look, you are not here. You know, you can't tell us we are not doing anything when you are speaking from the safety of the many countries that you have fled to. And for me, as a young person, there is that guilt that I am out in the U.S. Living a different life when people on the ground are sort of struggling and without the resources that I'm surrounded with. So, yeah.
Would you consider moving back full time to Zimbabwe?
I have started going back and forth. And at least at this stage in my career, I see myself splitting my time between home and the U.S. And home not necessarily being Zimbabwe. I've spent time in South Africa too, and Tanzania, and I connect intimately to those spaces. But I'm at a point where I'm just restless. I don't feel like being in one place. Yeah.
What was it like for you to learn that you were shortlisted for the Man Booker Prize, the first person from Zimbabwe ever to have that honor?
It was very, very humbling because, you know, it's, We Need New Names is only my first book. And when I was writing, I guess when you are creating and creating your first product, you're not necessarily thinking of its life afterwards. So that came when I was not expecting it. But as a young writer, I'm very much encouraged to keep going. Yeah.
Listeners, I want to say that this is an incredible book that's getting rave reviews all over. We Need New Names. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you so much, Elaine.